Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Did you ever hear someone say something you knew was wrong based on your own knowledge and experience? And yet the person making the statement believed it so passionately, you didn't feel comfortable interjecting an alternate view? Medical and behavioral terms seem to fall into this category most often for me. But that's probably because I have a medical and behavioral background. So my brain's more likely to register that something's off with how a word or phrase is being used. For all I know, people are tossing about legal or car repair terms under questionable circumstances that sound okay to me. In general, medical and behavioral terms carry a special cachet for many people. Perhaps they believe using such terminology gives more credibility to their personal views. Meanwhile, my experience with those within the medical and behavioral community at all levels is that the more they know, the less they're likely to use such terms. When questionable terminology occurs in the behavioral realm, I find it happens more frequently in owners' descriptions of canine aggression. But I've heard some pretty interesting, supposedly definitive terms used to describe some aggressive feline behaviors, too. Equally interesting, these explanations seem to come in waves that suggest something akin to the promoter's buzz. Someone uses a word or phrase that seems to describe a problem similar to one the listener's own animal displays. The listener then adopts the terminology and presents it to others as fact, and the others pass it on. Consider the rage wave. There was a period during which practically every aggressive Springer Spaniel I saw came pre-diagnosed with Springer rage. Over time, some folks found the terminology so appealing, they applied it to other breeds and species. I can recall at least one Rottweiler who arrived pre-diagnosed with Rottie rage and a smattering of cats with Calico, Orange Tabby, or Siamese rage. As best I can gather, some researcher originally used rage to describe one possible mental effect experienced by some in a very small population of Springer Spaniels with a rare genetic mutation that caused a disease called fucoidosis. Fucoidosis is a terrible, progressive disease that causes multisystemic physical and mental deterioration. Put another way, animals with fucoidosis are very sick, and most of them die before they're 4 years of age. This did not describe the aggressive Springer Spaniels I was seeing. The problem with this self-imposed diagnosis, it often implied that there was no hope for the animal. That was fine for those seeking a quick but socially acceptable solution to their problem. Few would doubt the decision to euthanize an animal suffering from such a terminal condition. But aggression has many other causes that are treatable, and these forms could have been addressed by owners willing to do so had their perception of the problem not been tainted by the inappropriate application of the medical terminology. Over time, the concept of genetic determinism replaced rage. It wasn't rage syndrome that caused Calendula's aggression. Her genes made her do it. After all, she was a pit bull, Rottweiler, German Shepherd dog, Akita, Chihuahua, etc., ad nauseum. And everybody knows how aggressive they are. Implicit in this diagnosis was that the only treatment was some sort of gene replacement therapy, and that didn't exist. Another dead end for the dog, unless her owner was open to an alternative, more rational explanation. More recently, idiopathic aggression has joined the lineup of questionable terminology. You may be more familiar with the use of the adjective idiopathic to describe canine seizures of unknown origin, as in idiopathic epilepsy. In this situation, idiopathic means that the cause of the seizure, or what looks like a seizure, is unknown. The key point regarding idiopathic anything, though, is that its presence signals that what follows is not a definitive diagnosis. It simply reflects someone's opinion at that time. It doesn't mean that the answer is unknowable, or even that nobody knows the answer. Idio is also a personal prefix, comparable to saying, I don't have a clue what's causing this problem at this time. All those professional journals and that seemingly endless stream of clinical updates reflects the medical, biological, and behavioral community's ongoing quest to replace idiopathies with concrete diagnoses. Given how relatively little knowledge of ethology exists among the companion animal-owning segment of the U.S. population, it's not surprising that idiopathic aggression would show up in the behavioral vocabulary. But what idiopathic anything truly means always depends on context. Returning to our diagnosis of idiopathic epilepsy in the dog who had a seizure, the validity of that diagnosis depends on a degree of cluelessness surrounding the event. How much does the animal's owner or the person making the diagnosis know about the actual context of the seizure? In addition to the usual, the animal's age, breed, sex, reproductive status, health status, medications or supplements taken, diet, free roaming versus always leash status, description, number, duration of the seizures, results of a basic workup. We can add the incidence of neurotoxic plants, animals, and/or chemicals or other environmental contaminants or emotional stressors to which the dog may have been exposed over long periods of time as well as recently. What's going on with this dog in the behavioral and bond realm? Yes, there are such things as behavioral seizures in animals as well as people. The more information and knowledge and experience to interpret it correctly, the more likely the cause or causes of the seizure will be determined. But suppose no desire exists to explore the context and possible causes of aggression further. This takes me back to the pseudo-rage diagnosis. People may become so anxious or frightened when their own animals display aggression that it's no surprise that some opt for denial as a way to distance themselves from the problem. At the same time, though, the fear-stoked brain becomes more reactive and rational processing of the problem and any resolution becomes increasingly unlikely, if not impossible. Give such a person a pseudo-diagnosis such as rage or idiopathic aggression that sounds terminal with no hope in sight, and euthanasia will seem like the only caring option. Does this mean that I believe that all aggressive animals can be rehabbed and that euthanasia is never a viable option? No. But I do believe that when we make such decisions, they should be rational ones. We shouldn't allow our fears to permit the misrepresentation or misinterpretation of medical or behavioral terminology turn us into idiots when it matters the most.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.